Deadwood Soundlab.
All right. Here's the... Oh, yep, the clap. One, two...
We still got it.
All right, all right.
My name is Charles R. Horgan, and this is a very special episode of The Real War Project.
Hit the chorus!
Hi, Charles, and welcome to our awards show, or as I called it, the Flags of Our Fathers extravaganza of cinematic excellence.
Boy, wow. Aaron, we got in the foxhole here. The award ceremony is held at here out in no man's land. What a treat. Everybody's sloshing through the mud and showing up. It's a fantastic foggy day out here in the corpse-soaked fields of Real War Project.
The barbed wire is twinkling, the privates are strewn along it. I'm excited to be here with you in the bunker, listening to the shells land with nary a care in the world. We watched 33 movies, and the question is, do you have a top three for best picture or worst picture among that list?
First batch, Paths of Glory, Glory, Big Parade. I mean, Paths of Glory is going to have to be that one for me.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Batch two?
See, the Strange Love and Failsafe, I both love them for what they do. So I can't pick between either one. It's going to have to be Strategic Air Command.
That's the one that wins by default. It's a good conversation. Loved the episode. Hot garbage of a movie. Although it did generate one of my favorite text messages to Charles in all of the world. Dr. Strangelove wins for me. I admire and understand your desire to have a competition between the two of them, because Failsafe is very good. And I bet if I knew more about movies, I would appreciate it even more than I do. But Dr. Strangelove is truly
fantastic. Although, you know, Failsafe does give us that fantastic ending sequence of the freeze frames, all the lives coming to a stop. That is notable.
Agree. What about Batch 3? Man Who Would Be King, Lone Survivor, The Beast of War.
Surprisingly, I think the one that I'm going to have to pick as the winner of this, as much as I love Man Who Would Be King, and it'll be ranked higher on my personal list of movies that I enjoy, it's Beast of War.
Yeah, I thought for sure you might go to bat for Man Who Would Be King, but I think we're going to agree here. Although, there's a lot to say about Lone Survivor. Mm-hmm. It's not a movie I enjoy, but from the standpoint of this project, it is probably higher than those two movies in terms of what it contributes to the conversation. But in terms of, like, best movie of that batch, now, Beast of War was really fascinating. 1988. Ages immaculately.
It's really surprisingly brings up some fascinating questions about our own stuff. It's strangely prescient. Mm-hmm.
We did in Afghanistan is what we learned in that episode.
Afghanistan.
The next batch.
Star Wars cultures. Okay. I'm sorry, Aaron. It's going to be Hidden Fortress for me.
Yeah. The Dam Busters, the Hidden Fortress, and Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. You know, Star Wars has such a huge imprint on my brain that I feel like that does have to be the answer. But as far as, like, the better movie, I think I would agree with you. I think the Hidden Fortress is a better movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you know what? I love that princess. And everybody got better from being the princess a bit more.
Better lesson at the end. Going to reject death. Going to hear more about that later for me.
Yep. Anyway, yeah. Okay.
Child Soldiers is batch 5, The Bridge, Beasts of No Nation, Red Dawn.
Oh, yeah, no, that's The Bridge. That's easy.
It's The Bridge. If you have not seen The Bridge, and you haven't, because it's made in 1959, and if you're a movie nerd, you've seen it. Otherwise, you're like, what? It's so weird. It's so good. Mm-hmm. As a commentary on Child Soldiers, fascinating. Mm-hmm.
Okay, next is Apocalypse. How is the batch? Apocalypse Now, Full Metal Jacket, Jarhead.
Full Metal Jacket and Jarhead, that's the competition right there. I think Jarhead is an underappreciated movie, so I'm going to go with Jarhead.
Apocalypse Now doesn't make the list for you in the batch here. It's not fighting for the...
Apocalypse Now is a skillful movie that speaks of its time, and it is definitely a cocaine fueled dream of like...
I get to quote Dr. Metz and calling it a piece of horseshit. That's the best takeaway but in my I opinion think from the, that episode.
The more interesting conversations are brought up through Full Metal Jacket and Jarhead.
Jarhead, the first time I saw Jarhead, I didn't have any idea what I was expecting and walked out being like, that movie was stupid. And then we watched it for this show and we talked quite a bit about it. And I'm like, that movie is on a short list of movies to watch if you want to talk about commenting on war. Mm-hmm. Another really good episode.
It's funny as hell, yeah. And Gyllenhaal is great, and Jamie Foxx is great.
The music is good. Mm-hmm. The music is really good in that movie, and weirdly cynical, I think. I'm pumped that I saw Full Metal Jacket because I never had. I'm glad that I saw Apocalypse Now, although I never want to see it again. But the Full Metal Jacket insights are interesting. Obviously, Stanley Kubrick's a big deal, and I can kind of see why when we look at like a crosscut of just of his movies and how he's wrestling with some of this.
Oh, content. Yeah.
Batch 7, Spectacles of Slaughter. I feel like I know what you're going to say, but it's Zulu, The Siege of Jadotville, and 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi.
It's Zulu. Zulu's the winner there for me.
Same.
I think that Zulu is actually somehow even more progressive than 13 Hours, Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. And that's shocking.
Weirdly, we agree.
Yep. Although, you know, I give props to Secret Soldiers of Benghazi because it is a... riveting movie, and the action in there is truly gross.
Truly gross. Oh my god, it is very gross, and it's candy and delicious, and if you like Michael Bay, it's everything you want. The one comment I will make about that movie that you made in the episode is that it does a good job of tying a lot of different disparate pieces together that are all happening at the same time, and that's not easy.
No.
And you can say what you want about Michael Bay's explosions and villains that shoot their own foot with rockets and things. That's filmmaking, I suppose.
When he's on it with his filmmaking, he can truly craft a coherent spectacle of a lot of different things going on where you're somehow keeping track of everything.
Siege of Jadotville was so fascinating to see Netflix try to churn something out, and Zulu was really informative. Again, that conversation, the Dirt Maps we had that's out now with Dr. Metz, had a lot to say about this movie. I do think now it has to be my favorite Michael Caine movie of all time. I'm just going to say it. No matter what, I'm going to be like, this is the one to watch of his. Yeah.
I think you're definitely getting a different Michael Caine because he's kind of like the more like prim officer.
Prim is the word.
Bromhead, 24. That's my post, up there.
Who said you could use my men?
They were sitting around on their backsides doing nothing.
Rather you asked first, old boy.
And you usually see Michael Caine as like kind of like a more crude smartass.
Yeah, or like butler kind of guy. It's the way he says yes.
I was told that officer was out hunting.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Prim. That's the word. Boiling point. This one's tough. Matuan, Bloody Sunday, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Charles, what do you think?
God damn it. I love all three of these movies.
For different reasons, right?
Yeah, for different reasons. I think Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is a little underappreciated. Maybe they were hits. I mean, they did get a sequel, so, but I think it's smarter than it gets credit for. Bloody Sunday, that's a really fucking good movie. And Mate One, I really love, and I saw that before Bloody Sunday. So, for me, the one I'm going to have to move on is Mate One, I guess.
It's such a tough call between Mate One and Bloody Sunday. Mm-hmm. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, if you want, the budget was $170. Opening weekend, $72. Ooh. Gross worldwide, $710.
Oh, okay.
And if you're grossing $710 worldwide, again, you give me $170, I give you $710. You're going to take $170 of those set $710 and give it back to me.
Yeah.
Say, make another one and just keep it coming. That's how that math works out. No, but back to this batch. I really want to pick Matuan, and the more I've sat with it, the more I'm taking Bloody Sunday because of how honest it is.
Okay.
It is so honest. And you're going to hear more of this from me as we go. Those soldiers being like, oh, man, it was a great shot, mate. Oh, man, oh, God, did you like... I'm just sitting there nodding along. And as much as I want people to hear Hazel Dickens and believe that the Union can get headshot and not matter, it's like this movie is giving me so much more. So it's close, but I feel like right now I might go Bloody Sunday. It's tough.
Yeah. No, I get it. It's, I highly recommend both of them.
Yeah.
I highly recommend actually all three of them. Watch them all three
is a fun.
Yeah, convo. Make a weekend out of it. It's a treat, you know. None of them have happy endings.
This is what we learn about pacifism.
Yeah, or war.
It's not fun, ends poorly. Does it work? Yeah, but see prior.
If you had gone along with the pacifism, it would have probably ended happier. All of them, they go to war, and it winds up bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Hey, let's talk about more pacifism, because this next batch digs into some of this too. It's like really a fun conversation across batches. The batch 9 was taking sides before the rain. Welcome to Sarajevo, behind enemy lines.
You know, which one I'm going to choose here, it's going to be behind enemy lines. Yeah.
Really? Go on.
You know, before the rain has a very meaningful, like, choice. And, like, that beautiful walk away from the camera as the guy dies. Welcome to Sarajevo has that sequence where they go and they see the bombing, and they have to choose whether or not, like, they're there to help people or to just record their suffering to be watched on television. Or is it about sliding across a frozen lake and shooting your gun in a totally sick manner as the United States shows up and wins? And I think that's the one, actually.
Are we on thin ice? No, it is literally about sliding across the ice and shooting your pistol.
There is nothing more than that. It was the shocking. So really,
it's a good choice if this is your choice, because as an artifact of American grandstanding, totally. It's probably my favorite. I said this was my favorite batch, and that's why. I mean, it's incredible.
It's going to have to be between Before the Rain and Welcome to Sarajevo. I'll pick Sarajevo because of its importance in my life. Hmm. But I would say to anybody that's going to be watching any of these movies, absolutely 100% watch Before the Rain. It's a movie that needs to be watched more.
It's an incredible movie. It totally threw me for a loop. It's one of my top from the entire show. But I'm going to agree with you in this particular batch. I'm going to take Welcome to Sarajevo for the same reasons you said. The implication that it had on you and the implication that has for this project. That's a great episode. And it wrestles very directly with the media, Before the Rain does, in just a different way.
Mm-hmm. Before the Rain is a movie actually made from somebody from there.
Right.
And so you do get a more nuanced view of what it's like.
Yeah.
And the movie does make you think, and that's fun.
It's a better movie in my mind from a
it's
bigger
a
picture of movies.
Better movie. And absolutely, yeah. 100% go watch it. But Welcome to Sarajevo was more important to me in my life. And that, yeah. Seeing that dramatization of just kind of like the true daily suffering of people stuck in a war zone.
She's English.
Was so upsetting to me that I volunteered for the military, and then I volunteered the first chance and opening got to go to Kosovo
Yeah. We talked a lot about how like cinema informs our decisions of who we decide to become, and sometimes it's very explicit and sometimes it's very subtle, and in all ways it's interesting. And that's just, yeah, we had a good conversation in that batch. Mm-hmm.
It was somehow more impactful than seeing like the McNeil era News Hour footage of it.
That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it's because I've seen that, but I think it was like seeing stories of people. And that's the power, right, of filmmaking, is that you can learn to empathize or see, like, not on a grand scale of war, like, oh, there's, you know, they're shelling the city or whatever. You're just seeing like the story. Tiny, you know, like they zoomed way in, and every civilian is going through an epic movie like The Pianist or something when you're out there.
in that episode, we talked about how, you know, the whole movie is supposed to be about getting this girl out, and then they get the girl out, and then we're halfway through the movie. And I'm like, well, what's going to happen now? Oh, the bus ride from hell.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And you can read about that, and people can report about that in dispassionate voices. But everything from driving through places where you might explode to men with trucks showing up and taking all of the children off of the bus that have a certain name. Cinema really excels, like you said, at making it small. You're sitting in one of the chairs on the bus and you're looking around and you're just, there's nothing you can do and there's nothing any of these characters can do, and you see it in their eyes and they're just thankful they get to drive away alive after all of that.
Mm-hmm. Soldiers with guns are a menace.
Yeah, the men in trucks. We said it in Meituan and we will say it again now and we will say it again throughout the show. When the men in trucks waving their guns around show up, you know you're in for trouble. Just a bunch of fucking shitheads. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Batch 10, a crew of specialists. This is where we want to celebrate the men in trucks, and I'm still not buying it. The Guns of Navarone, Tears of the Sun, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. It's Star Trek 4. It has to be.
Yeah, it's, right? It's Star Trek. But go watch Navarone because it still holds up as a just an adventure movie from that golden age of Hollywood, mid to late 60s. You get people like really bucking trends and focusing on kind of some even deeper thoughts, and it'll get interesting. But yeah, it's Star Trek. I love Star Trek 4. I loved it from the first day I saw it. I still love it every time I watch it. And boy, doesn't it have a good message. You know, the Earth is dying. They accelerated the timeline in that movie, but those people, when confronted with the Earth dying, didn't just accelerate it. They found a peaceful way of solving it. And why can't we?
Well, because we don't have one of those ships that can fly around the sun and go back in time. If we could, we'd go take all the whales we could find and we'd throw them in the ocean and be like, there, does that fix it?
We'd drop them on those billionaires.
Yeah, I think The Guns of Navarone is everything you said. It's a great old-fashioned adventure movie, and it also has, as we said in the episode, an incredible storm scene, an incredible cliff climbing scene. I said there's something like 13 minutes or something like that in that movie where no one says a word and you're just glued to the screen, and that's impossible in filmmaking context. It's really hard to keep people infatuated like that.
With the exception of, with the exception maybe of Big Parade.
Right? This movie's going to come up more and more as we get to some of these other awards for sure, because it did the same thing halfway through. I was just like, this is a different movie, and suddenly I can't stop watching it.
Navarone brings up some interesting stories, you know, some interesting questions as well that don't exist in the book now that I have read the book.
Yeah, fun.
Yep. I won't spoil it too much for you, but Navarone the movie brings up some more ethical questions that the book does not.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that is for the better of the story.
Yeah. There are two reasons I will tell you to watch Tears of the Sun. Number one is because Tom Skerritt is taking phone calls on the flight deck of an aircraft carrier, and that's just fucking funny. Like, that's just legitimately funny. And number two, you should be a real war completionist. That's the only other reason to watch Tears of the Sun is so that you can say you watched all the movies that we did. That movie's hot garbage, and the soundtrack's great, and the rest of it sucks.
What if we made the Thin Red Line about how we're cool? So, Longest Day and the Overlords. You know, Longest Day, I can't say that it holds up because this is the first time I've seen it. But yeah, I thought it was not going to be good. I thought it was going to be sub-Navarone. I think it is still sub-Navarone.
Agree.
But actually, it's worth watching. It cooked right by. The guy who plays the German coastal officer, I just recently saw him in something else called The Wages of Fear. And, ooh, that's a good movie. That was remade into another film called Sorcerer that didn't do well. I have yet to watch it again. Sorcerer was intense, but I want to revisit now that I've seen Wages of Fear. Mm-hmm. So that guy's really good. Everybody in the movie was really good. Obviously, the Best Actor award goes to Ike.
The fourth wall break.
He stares at us and has like his weird like death grin on him.
I don't like it, but there it is. Gentlemen, I don't see how we can possibly do anything else but go.
Overlord 70, 1970s Overlord. That was all right. How does it hold up to 2018 Overlord?
It's a snooze fest.
Who knows? Who knows? They're both worth watching. They ask interesting questions.
In very different vocabularies.
Obviously, the winner is going to be the 1970s Overlord. That's an important movie, much like Before the Rain. It's just a movie that you should watch. In general, it's sort of like a forgotten classic. I think it would be more popular if more people just knew about it.
Yeah.
Especially, could you imagine if you were, it does show a boob. I was going to say, imagine like you could show that movie in school maybe, because it's short enough to
I think you hold can. Their attention. I mean, just because it has sex in it, I don't know that it's necessarily inappropriate for children. Does it sexualize women? It's an interesting conversation. That one in the makeout scene in the back of the cab of Before the Rain were the two to me that I thought were just kind of oddly, but kind of stereotypically placed from a masculine gaze, but would be interesting to do a little more thought on that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was looking at the lovemaking in Overlord as being sort of more of a love being the opposite of, I mean, obviously the opposite of war. It was framed with him being prepped to die in that moment.
He was dead already at that moment. Like, in the moment, in the movie, it's after he has visualized his own death and he's laying there dead, and then he says, now bring me back. And my question was, is that the same as Alexander essentially forcing himself on the woman in the back of the cab? Anyway, we don't have time for that in this episode, but it's an interesting crosscut. The Guns of Navarone, in my opinion, kind of runs laps around The Longest Day for a lot of reasons. It does have that big overhead battle shot that we talked about where they storm the town. That's really amazing. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that it's not terrible and that it clipped along. And I sent you a lot of like texts while I was watching it being like, this has Avengers vibes. And for that reason, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, you were saying, I think I like this. I was like, oh, cool. I can't wait then.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're up for a 1962, you know, World War II, and it was the most profitable black and white movie until Schindler's List. And it's an interesting movie in that capacity. Mm-hmm. Overlord 75 completely changed how I think about an anti-war movie in a lot of ways. I'd like to do just a whole other back look on that episode because that movie is very interesting and very thoughtful in the way that it not only utilizes the spectacle of violence, but also criticizes it. And 2018's Overlord caps off the batch in such a great way with gaming and the echoing back and forth of storytelling and how this movie is, or this battle in particular, is so important representationally. Hard to pick a favorite for the project, but as a movie, Overlord 75 is.
It's going
to
be Overlord 75, but if you want to have a fun time this for a Halloween or something and want to have a spooky time without it being too spooky and a good outcome, then absolutely watch Overlord. I don't think a lot of people watched Overlord, and I kind of don't know why.
It's not a big hit movie in any case. It's very fascinating. I did the best and the worst for the entire season. My top three best movies, Paths of Glory is number three for me. The Bridge is just edged out. Jarhead is just edged out. Before the Rain is number two and Overlord is number one. And we talked about this in a Dirt Maps earlier where it's like, I think that the message in Before the Rain is so fascinating, and as a film, it's so powerful. But Overlord is, it's a war movie. It is a war movie. Mm-hmm. And it wraps itself as a war movie, and it makes you question that war in ways that are very complex and very unfulfilling. And it ends in such an interesting way. I don't know. Do you have any like last three like of the entire season? If there were three movies that people had to watch, what would you tell them to watch, Charles?
For war movies, I'm going to say, in no order, Jarhead. I'm going to say, this is tough.
It is not easy.
I'm looking at The Bridge. I'm looking at Beast. And I think Beast of War.
I made a list of 10 for whatever it's worth.
I think I'm going to have to agree with you with Overlord.
Yeah.
And I think it's a toss-up here for me with Beast of War and The Bridge. I'm going to say Beast of War. Beast of War is almost, that's not my favorite. I mean, these are in no order, these three.
Right.
But
right.
I'm going to say that one is almost like a stage movie. We cast anybody in these roles here. Even the Russians are off. They're Americans for some reason.
The Rainbow Coalition.
Right, exactly. Said, yeah. Where it's like, it's a story about this world, but it's not actually a story about this world, while at the same time being strangely true and inspired by other stuff. And so it's also like a hidden, It's a hidden gem. Like, it never got released, as far as I know. Overlord is also a hidden gem, and Jarhead's a hidden gem.
The Beast is such a fascinating commentary on Afghanistan. I'm just going to say again, it ages really well.
It didn't know what how right it was going to be. And
right. It's really worth emphasizing, this is way before 9/11, okay? This is way before the United States ever thought it was going to invade Afghanistan. This is exclusively about the Russians until it's not. I also made a worst movies list.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you won't be surprised to find out. The number three for me is Apocalypse Now. Number two, maybe it'll surprise you a little. I put Glory on here. Number two is the second worst movie now. It was my favorite movie as a kid, and it's definitely one of my favorite of the batch, but it's rank propaganda, and the more I watch it, the more upset I am that it's kind of the longest day for the Civil War.
Dang.
And then, yeah, the worst movie, it has to be 13 hours. It has to be Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. It is so bad in so many ways. And also, like, a rank political tool to try to stop Hillary Clinton from getting elected. It's so ridiculously stupid. It's an incredible movie. If there's one of these movies that I'm throwing into the ocean to never be seen again, it might be that one.
I'm going to say that the biggest sins to me are movies that are straight up forgettable.
Mm.
Straight up forgettable movies now for me. Tears of the Sun, for sure.
Lieutenant, God will never forget you.
Lieutenant. Behind Enemy Lines? No. Behind Enemy Lines is fucking dumb and hilarious.
It's both of these things.
Yep. The Balkans batch, all of those were good. Boiling Point, all of those are good. Spectacles of Slaughter. You know what? 13 Hours, still exciting. Jadoville, kind of forgettable. And that's a bummer. And although it did have a couple moments, the great F-word yelled by Mark Strong, and also the F-4 Phantom shooting down the UN guy.
What about Strategic Air Command?
Yeah.
If forgettability is on your list, you may be forgetting the single...
Yeah, that's like I'm going up and Strategic Air Command...
Oh, you're going backwards. Yeah, I see. Okay.
I'm going up my list here. Like Lone Survivor, I won't be able to forget that one, actually. Like, Beast of War, you know, that's a favorite. Man Who Would Be King is a favorite. But yeah, Strategic Air Command, punishingly boring at times. Got some great moments. His wife, great. Mm-hmm. Great in it. Mm-hmm. You get to see a young Colonel Potter. Awesome.
Want to see the rest of this big cigar? We do.
Zip.
Thump.
Airplane goes down.
Just weren't ready for all that weight to go to one side of the plane at once.
Oh, and Strategic Air Command has Jimmy Stewart all cracked out on Air Force meth.
Right.
Can't wait to get up in the air again.
June Allison played Sally.
That's it.
Yep. And her and his relationship is not forgettable. It's actually kind of interesting.
That's the most interesting part of the movie.
Critical.
Yep.
Forgettability for me has to be Tears of the Sun. Like,
yeah, because we did have jokes.
The aircraft carrier is legitimately
funny. Yeah, Tears of the Sun was truly like boring the heck out of me. Yeah, so actually there wasn't really a lot of forgettable movies in here for me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Tears of the Sun truly by the end of the project felt like straight up work.
Agree.
It felt like the longest movie that I had watched up to that point. Yeah, Jadoville I totally forget about almost for the most part until I'm actually forced to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Red Dawn, I liked, to a certain, I will remember Red Dawn. So
yeah. Avenge me.
Yeah, I'm going to say Tears of the Sun is probably my most disliked movie of this group. Do I think that 13 Hours, Secret Soldiers of Benghazi has horrible politics? Yes. Yes. 100%.
It could have like shown Hillary Clinton. It just needed to be more honest about it. Like,
hey, we aren't saying. We're not saying.
It pulled too many punches. That's what's wrong with 13 Hours. It just wasn't explicit enough.
13 Hours was a little too gloves on for my approach.
Oh, God. Eli said that Michael Bay has hands made of lead.
Yeah.
This is why they put such big gloves on.
Yeah, so I think my big toss in the fire one is going to be Tears of the Sun, but the other ones, like, totally 13 Hours, if you can laugh about 2016, then if you can look back and just cynically laugh about everything that happens and how obvious it all seemed in retrospect, then by all means, watch it. Because it is a skillfully crafted movie and it flies along and it blows apart. But also, you know, do a shot whenever it shits on all the eggheads freaking calling on phones and stuff. Or whenever it really revels in the absolute manliness of Lecky flipping a freaking tire in a Speedo. I mean, he looks great.
When you find yourself siding with the CIA, you know something has gone horribly wrong in your choices for the evening. But there we were. Okay, best soldier or worst soldier, Charles? We get three soldiers from the entire show. Best and worst.
So what is a good, what's a good soldier, you know?
You get to pick. You're your own awarding entity.
Look, allegedly the good soldier is the one who is going to say no to a bad command. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, so let's say the dude from Beast of War, the lead of Beast, that isn't the guy from Scarface playing the village leader,
right?
Bauer or whatever his last name is. Yeah. Stephen Bauer.
No, the guy that leaves the tank crew. Mm-hmm. He takes a good look at his tank crew, decides he can't be part of the tank crew anymore, decides to.
He gets totally punished for it. They stick a freaking grenade under the back of his head and tie him like a rock with his arms outstretched like Jesus.
It's expensive to resist the machine. Yeah. Okay. So that's one.
Let's see. Who else is a good soldier here? I mean, the two guys in Man Who Would Be King, aren't they just total scamps? Great soldiers.
They laugh an avalanche down that gets them across the border. I mean, if that's not soldiering.
I do love them for just being, I mean, they're just a great duo of classic troops. It's like if two E4s went and did the story. Yep. Okay. Well, it's just like those guys who like, I don't want the responsibility, but I'm very competent. Mm-hmm. But I also like to sham a lot. You know what? There's not a lot of good soldiers.
Right.
If we're going to go along this, with the exception of like Tears of the Sun. You know, he's
is good soldiering as far as doing your job, except like because your point in Tears of the Sun is this is never what actually happens.
Right.
This is never what the SEALs are actually in the news for.
If we're going about like the guys like making the right choice and doing the
like actually inserting themselves when they can make a difference to stop like a village being burned, like, hey, great, we love this fairy tale. I think you're missing one that you're going to want, and I've got it on my list. Number three for me is Blue Eyes. I think Blue Eyes is a pretty good soldier because he refuses to throw his buddy off the thing. He ultimately turns against the guy. I think that he's on my list of resistors. I definitely put Princess Yuki on my list. I think that if she can stay silent with those people, she could like attack any beach. She could do anything.
Well, I was wondering that you know, because I'm thinking of troops, you know.
She's not a troop. She's I'm cheating. Yeah. Okay, and this one then maybe a strain too. My first is Alexander from Before the Rain.
Oh, yeah.
I think as far as choices that are made in this movie, he makes the best one.
Yeah.
So he's the winner. The worst soldiers for me are number three, Burnett from Behind Enemy Lines, because Owen Wilson is insufferable in that movie. The second worst for me is the guy, you're going to hate this, in The Bridge, who gets gut shot for telling the children that they don't fight kids. He's just a bad soldier, I said, and I'll stand by it even now. And then the very worst soldier of all time for this show for me is Thomas Beddoes. He doesn't know why he's there. This is Overlord 75. He has no clue why he's there. He falls down the hill. He puts his head up in the Higgins boat at arguably the last possible moment that you should ever be putting your head up in a Higgins boat. He's just a bad soldier, Charles. He's not cut out for this.
He's very average. He's a very average soldier. Look, I would be lying if I said I never ate shit while humping. You know, like it's...
Could I do better? No, not at all.
There's times I wished I had fallen down the side of a hill and like sprained my ankle so I wouldn't have to march anymore. If I'm going to say bad soldiers are people that are actively hurting the their unit.
This is a different read, but a good list. Yep, there's some real options here. Tank Boy.
Yeah, I was going to say it's going to have to be Duskull or whatever from Beast of War. His choices are hurting everyone. Man, that little fanatical asshole with the pistol from the bridge, I hate him. He's...
Yeah. The guy who gets his dad's gun. Yeah.
Go join your dad.
Yep. That rifle shot, frankly, couldn't have come sooner. I know it sounds like I'm glorifying the death of children, but they are fictional.
Yeah. You know, everybody's pretty competent in Zulu. There's no cowards there, really. Right. 13 hours. Everybody who's a troop in that is badass.
They fight for nothing in, Siege of Jadoville. I'm distracted. Go ahead.
They're like sacrificed for it. It's like, we have to show force, but at the same time, we can't go in and support you.
Right.
We're not going to say that out loud, but everybody has to play their part. Yeah. Hmm. Oh, you know what? Bad Troop, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. What's his name? Joe Toy.
I don't remember his name. He was forgettable.
I forget what his real name is. He's also in Fringe and Band of... I'm using his Band of Brothers name. Mm-hmm.
Carver.
He's a bad asshole. Yeah, in that movie. Look, Bloody Sunday, chock full of them.
Right. Oh, the guy in charge of Bloody Sunday. The guy who's like, oh, there will be a problem. And when there is that problem, then the Marines will break through.
Right. I cannot wait.
Yeah, that's a good list.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of them. But you know what? Who the actual true worst troops are in this list are two heroes from frickin' Hidden Fortress.
Tahe and Matashichi. Yeah, I had to look these names up too because I have them in another area. And you're right. They are like emphatically bad at soldiering.
They never even get to the... They're so bad at it, they never get to the battle and then get punished by their own side. Yeah.
Yeah. If C-3PO and R2-D2 are more competent, then I think we can label them as worst soldier material. Great content there. I agree. Best performer.
Ooh.
We get five is what we said. Five performers. I'll read mine. I feel pretty good about it. And I like listening to you kind of work it out. It's number six, because I'm a cheater, is Jake Gyllenhaal. I think he's so good in Jarhead, but he doesn't make the list.
Mm.
I don't know if I'm going to say this name right, but it's Misa Urahura, which is Princess Yuki, is my five. Number four is Marissa Tomei, who's very, very good in Welcome to Sarajevo. Number three is Andre Brower from Glory. He is so good as Searles, and I really latched onto that character as a kid for reasons that are hard to explain. Number two, the more time I've spent, I did just write a bunch about it, but the more time I've spent with Carrie Fisher's performance in Star Wars, just a weirdo movie, she is so good in that movie in terms of blending into a character that has a lot of power and position in ways that aren't, what's the word I want? Really overdone, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The best performance is also the worst soldier. His name is Brian Sterner. I don't know what else he's in, but he played Tom Beddoes in Overlord, and he is just completely believable as that kid. And he reminded me so much of every college kid I've ever known that I just fell into that character. So those are my five. I made a list of 20 performers that I considered for this list, but those are my top six. How'd you do?
Is what's his name on there? Is D'Onofrio from Full Metal Jacket in there?
You know what? Vincent D'Onofrio is not on this list, and that is what we would call a glaring oversight. He didn't make my top 20. Absolutely. And he should. Yeah. I mean, he's so celebrated for that scene, and you can see why.
Yeah.
And not just that scene, but his whole performance. Like,
his whole performance throughout, this whole transformation is sad.
We're talking about Pyle there in Full Metal Jacket. For those few of you out there that have not seen that movie, don't know who we're talking about. No, he didn't make my 20. There's so many good performers. Do you have a top five? Who would they be, do you think?
Let's see. Overall of performers, I love Kirk Douglas, right? Like, mm-hmm. I've used to imitate his little like rant at the end of the thing, because he like bounces his head. You can go to hell before I hear that out.
Podcasting is failing our audience right now, but it's really good.
Yeah. He's really good. You know, if I was just to pick performances from moments,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say the mom from Big Parade when he comes mm-hmm. home. Oh, mm-hmm. God, what a good freaking moment that was. Douglas has that walk through the trench and the anger and sadness simultaneously on his face as he's looking at all of his dudes.
Yeah.
That's a great performance. Andre Brower in freaking Glory, freaking Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Like, how do you choose from
it's
that?
Hard.
Like, it's,
you get one more.
You got some really great. Well, it's like, yeah, I can't. it's hard to choose, like, what are you going to to give it to? Like, does it have to be somebody who is in the movie longer? Right. Is it just like a one moment of a performance that you love?
I said Henry Fonda from Failsafe, and you pointed out the guy he was talking to in the scene on the phone. Also, just both of them, that whole scene is so good.
Yeah.
It's such an intense phone call.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, that's a Larry Hagman that I've never... that I, as a little kid, never saw before until that movie, where it's like, oh, he should just have to deal with Genie's bullshit.
There are so many in Dr. Strangelove. Obviously, Sterling Hayden.
Dr. Strangelove is just a murder. I mean, yeah, if you're going to say, like, best performance all the way through of a single actor, it's like, you got to say, what's his
name? Muffly. What's his fucking name? I have it on here.
Peter Sellers.
But there it is. Yeah, Peter Sellers. There it is.
He plays three different people, and they're all insane. they're all amazing. They're amazing performances. Like, one of the best soldiers has got to be, like, the RAF guy, right? Good. Like, who's trying to stop nuclear Armageddon.
Holding his little gum there. Just holding his gum. Just not sure what to do.
Trying to tiptoe around fragile masculinity, you know,
very fragile world. Like two wheels on the edge of a cliff teetering with rocks falling out. It's about to be a spectacle here.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the best performance all around is going to be have to be Peter Sellers.
He's on my list.
In a movie chock full of best performances. Because then it's like, oh, how do I not choose George C. Scott?
Right.
Because his performance in there is legendary. Mm-hmm.
Yep, he's on my list too. Turgidson. His stomach slap is one of the best performances in the entire season. Just the way he says, here's what we're going to do, all body.
He's so good. Look, Agu from Beasts of No Nation.
Yeah, he's on my list.
He was fantastic. Like, name every here. Absolutely shout out
Abraham
to him.
Atta, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what's his name was good in it, too. Idris Elba.
He was, you know, really, like, good. Yeah.
Big surprise, people. Right. He's great in a role.
We talked about Catherine Cartlidge in Before the Rain.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
Gyllenhaal, I agree with you. Gyllenhaal, I love him.
I can't explain why I love him in that movie so much. He is so...
Is there a movie with Gyllenhaal and Ben Foster in it? Oh, that would be so good.
Mm, interesting question. Yeah. Oh, here's a name that we haven't listed yet that is on my list. Matthew Broderick is the weirdest pick for Colonel Shaw, and he absolutely nails it.
Yeah.
He completely nails it. He is your everyman rich guy's kid colonel, who both believably is a nepotism choice and also would, like, storm that fort at the end. It's so bizarre. Mm-hmm. They could have written him more honestly, we said in the episode, but he lands it.
And he probably would have landed that too.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the real shame, is I think they could have done it right, but too bad.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, totally.
That movie would not have gotten made.
No, definitely not. Nobody from Shadowville gets picked. No. 13 Hours, nobody. You know, Zulu, technically, I could say Michael Caine. I think he does a great job in there, but I don't think it's going to stand past Peter Sellers or any of those, some of those other people I've named. I mean, I wouldn't pick him over Agu as much as I love Michael Caine.
We talked about Renee Adoree's performance in The Big Parade where she laughs at the frog. You said that was one of your big standout moments. Mm-hmm. John Gilbert is Apperson in The Big Parade. I thought I put him on here. Who the hell was Slim? Like, we hate that guy so much. Does that put him on our list of good performances? Aren't we supposed to hate that guy? Except as a sacrificial.
I don't think we're supposed to
hate him. He's so over the top, Charles.
I think he's supposed to be, like, the one that we love and are sad that he dies. Sadly, the bartender guy just waxed, and then you just never see him
again. I totally missed that he died, but okay, we've done way.
Yeah, Jimmy didn't even get sad about it. You know, a lot of too many good performances in Mate One for me to pick one.
Mm-hmm.
Bloody Sunday, that main actor in Bloody Sunday, what's his name? He was also in Sarajevo.
Yeah.
Fantastic job.
Such an interesting turnaround.
I mean, that movie
feels
so natural.
Nesbitt, there it is. James Nesbitt.
Yeah, for sure, check him out. You know, Koba was great. He had a great performance. He can ride a horse. It would have been nice to see Koba. I think we already maybe said this. See Koba showdown with
Roku Rota.
Mm-hmm. Roku Rota. God. I mean, Roku Rota would take him.
Absolutely. But we're going to watch, aren't we?
We're going to watch it. Yeah, exactly.
all eyes. Okay. How about best song, Charles? Do you have a best song? This one's fun. I love this category. I have four because we were only allowed three because I cheat. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to agree on the first one, but it has to be Fire in the Hole.
Oh, it's going to be Fire in the Hole.
It has to be.
Yeah.
You can tell them in the country, tell them in the town. The miners down in Mingo laid their shovels down. We won't pull another pillow, load another ton, or lift another finger till the union we have won. Stand up, boys, let the bosses know. Turn your buckets over, turn your lanterns low. There's fire in her hearts and fire in her soul, but there ain't gonna be no fire in the hole.
God, I was gonna say the little song that that Sean Connery's singing there before he falls off of the bridge in Man Who Would Be King.
Band the chosen few on whom the spirit came. 12 valiant saints, their hope they knew, and mocked the cross and flame. He met the tyrant's brandished steel, the lion's gory mane.
That one's pretty good.
Did not make my list.
There's the town festival song from Hidden Fortress. Yeah, that was pretty good. Let's see, Apocalypse Now, that has tons of songs in there. We get the Doors opening up that movie. Does that count?
This is the end, and Aaron's like, is it? Please, it's not. Shit. There's more to this movie.
This is the end. JK, it's just the start of this. Yeah, Full Metal Jacket, it's got that great opening song as everybody's getting their heads shaved.
Yeah, Goodbye My Darling, Hello Vietnam. Did not make my list, but good contribution for sure.
Yeah.
Kiss me goodbye and write me while I'm gone. Goodbye, my sweetheart. Hello, Vietnam.
America has heard the bugle call. And you know it involves us one and all.
Also, the Mickey Mouse song, Mickey Mouse Club song at the end.
Oh, damn. Mm-hmm. Good call. I mean, a weird cut.
A weird cut.
And that's like, what does it mean?
Mickey Mouse, Mickey Mouse, forever let us hold our banner high, 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 high. Boys and girls from far and near, you're welcome as can be. MICKEYMOUSE.
From Jarhead, we have Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Okay.
And I think Fuck the Power in the same
technically,
scene.
Technically, yes, in the same scene. This is the pivot. This is how we feel about old what's-his-name out there, whose name I can't remember, but we just don't like that guy.
In Zulu, we get a bunch of Welshmen singing at different points.
Stop your dreaming. Can't you see their spear points gleaming? See their warrior pennons streaming to this battlefield.
Sing!
Men of Arlet, stand ye steady.
Come on,
they
sing!
Cannot sing. Be ever steady.
And then we also get that beautiful salute of the Zulus coming back at the end. And just as a huge group of people singing together, it sounds really amazing.
They're taunting us.
Couldn't be more wrong. They're saluting you.
The music back and forth in that movie, we had a conversation in the episode about that. That was fun, mm-hmm. for sure.
I don't remember anything from Shadowville. I mean, there's obviously there's like the fiddle music to establish that it's Ireland at the beginning.
I couldn't even find the soundtrack for it.
Oh, really?
I literally had to sample the trailer to get the music for it, I said, because Netflix did not even produce a soundtrack because they do not care.
Yeah.
They are just trying to get Oscar net buzz and to show they can make a war movie.
There was some music when the electricity came on in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I can't tell you what it was. Before the Rain, I don't remember.
Before the Rain, the music at the beginning, like the theme. So one of the things I did is edit most of these episodes, which meant that I was always going back and editing while we were recording. And when we recorded Before the Rain, I listened to us previewing it at the end of the Batch episode. Like, the next movie we're going to watch is Before the Rain. And as soon as the theme dropped and it sounded like this... Having seen Before the Rain, when I heard that, I was like, oh my god, that movie's so good. Because the theme hits again at the end. Ties in the whole circles not round thing. Good music. Not on my list, but that theme in particular, now that you mention it, is a really solid one. Guns of Navarone, the theme totally. For that is a jam. It's a jam. I whistle it all the time.
In all of its versions. So the original version, get to learn the words to the Guns of Navarone.
Islands of Greece are green and beautiful, green and beautiful, where the olive trees grow. In the fields below, but high on the cliffs.
And then sing that like a ska person to the Guns of Navarone.
Right. I forgot that there were words to that, and there are. And I also forgot that there is the whole ska component to it, and there is. That really elevates all of this.
Yeah, you gotta put a band together just to perform that. That would be freaking awesome.
It would take like 20 minutes, but yeah.
Let's see here. I couldn't tell you any of the music from Behind Enemy Lines. I'm sure that there's some rock music playing as they're like slinging footballs off.
Oh, God. Remember there was that stupid early 2000s song about how his car has a CD player when they're in their jet? And we're just like, oh, my God. This is so fucking terrible. He's got a brand new car.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
The 2000s were awful.
Star Trek has great music to it. It's legendary, but I can't tell you any of the songs. I don't think there's any songs in it.
They didn't even use the theme at the beginning. They used the one that you said sounded like a Christmas song. And when you said that, I dropped the part that I thought sounded like a Christmas song. And it does sound like a Christmas song.
It's the ding dong dongs and stuff.
It's the bells. Yeah, that's Christmassy.
As Gunther and the Sunshine Girls would say, it's the ding ding dong.
It's the ding ding dongs and the tra la la Christmassy.
Yeah. No, totally. Yeah, the fa la.
Oh, I got you.
We say the fa la la.
Ooh, my ding ding dong. That's a song I haven't heard in a while, but it's still in there too. Okay.
Longest Day's got a, that has a theme song as well.
Yeah, the whistle. Doesn't work.
At the end, but it had like lyrics to it, which were dumb.
Mm-hmm. There is a choir version of that.
Many men came here as soldiers. Many men will pass this way. Many men will count the hours as they live
and the whistling up the beach, I just thought was so inappropriate.
Yeah. It's the opposite of the ending to Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right.
Overlord 75 has that great musical drop when they're driving everywhere. I don't know where I'm going.
This one definitely made my list. It is We Don't Know Where We're Going Until We're There, and it kills me.
We don't know where we're going until we're there. There's lots and lots of rumors in the air. We heard the captain say, we're on the move today. We only hope the blinking sergeant major knows the way. We've chased us round and round the barrack square. And now we're on the road to anywhere. No one's in the know. We're singing as we go. Oh, we don't know where we're going until we're there.
That one is an excellent, excellent sequence. The strongest ones, I think, is going to be Overlord, Mate One, maybe Full Metal Jacket.
Mm-hmm. The Mickey Mouse one?
I think the Mickey Mouse one.
Yeah.
Is pretty good. Although.
It's a good ad.
I forgot. The winner is Paths of Glory. It's the ending of Paths of Glory.
Yeah. So when they say they've got to go back to the front and they play the really patriotic music at the end of
the patriotic version of the incredibly sad song that one lady is singing when the guys have like the one moment of humanity. Yeah.
It's really smart. That also didn't make my list, and it's a notable omission. My number three, my first two are the same, Fire in the Hole, Don't Know Where We're Going Until We're There. Number three, I think you'll agree, the Wagner Charge from Glory. That song is just a slammer as far as fighting. When you listen to this, I mean, it shows up in so many trailers. It showed up in so many other contexts. It's such a famous version. And this isn't from a movie, Charles, but this is a product of the show, so I put it on this list. You tuned me into Dog-Faced Soldier, and I've been whistling this damn thing forever. It is.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm glad I can pass the pain on.
It is a creepy song.
On all the posters that I read, it says the army feels in. Down to build me over again. I'm just a dog-faced soldier with a rifle on the shoulder, and I'm ready for whatever comes my way. So feed me ammunition, keep me in my own division. Your dog-faced soldier boy's okay.
Yeah, get in on it. I'm glad that you hate it.
It's the kind of like whistling at the end of The Longest Day. They're tearing me down to build me over again. I'm just a dog-faced soldier with a rifle. And it's like, this is not honest. Newsflash. Anyway, yeah, that one made my list because once I've learned that it's in there and I'm like, it's working, it makes me walk places.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you... Okay. We'll eventually get to a movie that actually has it in there.
Yeah, and then we can really include it. I'm very curious about the next category, which we just generically called Best Camera Stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I only have two entries. I put Overlord 75 and Lone Survivor. We said Overlord 75's use of historic like material is so incredibly fascinating, and also the ways that they shoot moments in movies that happen in ways that take all of the meaning out. And then I also put Lone Survivor on this because it just looked incredible. Mm-hmm. It looked really beautiful, and I don't know more to say about it. Like, somewhere between, you know, like the old Guns of Navarone, almost like Pulp Fiction-style adventure look, and the Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, and frankly, Donald Planet of the Apes, where everything feels like almost chromatic in its effect, like driven presentation. Mm-hmm. Lone Survivor hits the sweet spot for me. I don't know. It's just all of those lens flares, maybe. But what do you think, as like someone who actually pays attention to this, who do you think does the best camera work? Are you going to put... I think you're going to put Dr. Strangelove on there because of how it informs so many other stuff, but that's just me inserting my opinion. What are you going to put?
Well, look, there's some beautiful... The cinematography in Glory is beautiful. You know, the film is... The film industry is inherently racist. It's not easy through design because the film wasn't built originally to deal with darker complexions. And Glory is shot beautifully with where you don't get people washed out or completely like silhouetted or something in there. That is not easy to do in an era when probably there's like, I would be willing to bet that the cinematographer for the movie had to test a ton of film, obviously, before they found one that was appropriate for that. A Big Parade has a battle sequence at the end that is overlaid with so many different shots of weird things going on, where it becomes a chaotic avant-garde experience with the music and everything, that I definitely have to give props for that. Paths of Glory has that famous walk through the trenches. Mm-hmm. That is a single shot with the camera going through there, and it's fantastic.
I see that again and again and again. Now that I know what it's from, I see it in so many contexts.
Yeah.
So many people evoke that shot. The Glory note is well taken. It was nominated. I don't know if it won, but it was definitely nominated for Best Cinematography.
Oh, yeah.
And you're right about not only the character actors, but also just the spectacle. It's huge.
Yeah.
And it looks incredible. And the night stuff looks good, and the day stuff looks good, and it all looks amazing.
It all looks really good. Strangelove, I mean, Strangelove is legendary. It's got big sets. It's beautiful black and white. It's an amazingly shot film, and it has those weird handheld sequences. Mm-hmm. That I feel like inform a lot of stuff later on. Mm-hmm. Strategic Air Command has, admittedly, it has some amazing aerial photography in there from the time. And
such an interesting contribution to this, right? Technicolor extravagance of the DOD.
If you ever want to see those airplanes in all their detail from the outside and flying and stuff, yeah, okay, watch that movie.
We talked about how Technicolor is... They said Technicolor is better than real life and how it feels better than real life. It feels like Wizard of Oz candy color. And if you like those airplanes and that kind of thing, then go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Lone Survivor, it's fine. Like all of these, that Afghanistan batch, like that's all competent stuff. I'm thinking of like camera motions and stuff, like scenes where I was like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Dam Busters, when the dog showed up, I definitely said, holy shit.
But that was different. That wasn't the cinematographer. That was right. The dog.
Hidden Fortress. Holy fuck.
Don't blame the cinematographer for that one, Charles. Sorry.
It isn't the camera work necessarily, but the frickin' duel in Hidden Fortress.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's like a lot of very long shots for that, and it... It seems scary.
It does.
Yeah.
It definitely does.
Yeah. Beasts of No Nation has a famous, like, very long single take in there, kind of a signature of that director. When they attack the village, that's pretty competent, you know, like that's, but I feel like it's sort of less of an impact these days. Everybody's like, oh my God, it's a single take. Wow. It's like, just tell the story instead of.
There's one of those in The Karate Kid that I hadn't noticed until I watched it for work, and I'm like, that's a big, long, single take. It's like one of the first times that Miyagi and Daniel talk to each other, and it's a fascinating scene as one shot.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I'm going to say, you know, looking at all of these, I mean, obviously Overlord has actual, real, true footage, and that is...
used in ways that are really weird.
Yeah, and the way they use it and intersperse it with the story and everything is brilliant. I mean, the movie is a brilliant movie. The new Overlord has that amazing sequence with the whole airplane coming apart. Like, that's crazy. You know, it's amazing what you can do with digital special effects and everything. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say one of my favorite movies for cinematography and all of that stuff, framing and everything, is going to be Jarhead. I loved the little subversive choices with stuff, the reflection of the explosions going off, you know, like the
yeah
the mirror image almost of all of the guys eating and then all of the guys blown up in the circle. Jarhead was really, really gave me a lot to kind of chew on for fun with its imagery in there. And I think it was, you know, I mean, obviously it's purposely going for those choices, but I really loved the look of Jarhead. Mm-hmm. You know, Gyllenhaal's shirtless, you know.
if we're going to include the use of historical footage in Overlord 17, then I think we should talk a little bit about Jarhead's use of Apocalypse Now.
Oh, yeah.
And how a bunch of people, when we bring it up, they're like, yeah, that's a referent, and that's interesting. And it is. It's working to destabilizing it. And referencing, you know, Full Metal Jacket, Get Some, Marines Get Some, tying those two together to really punctuate that whole batch. That's not a particular cinematography choice, but when it comes to the scene from Apocalypse Now being showed in the theater, like, that's interesting.
Yeah, and all these guys just, like, about to jizz in the audience. Yeah, right.
Wow. The guy, you know what it was, Charles? It's so weird. When he hits his head with the helmet with the magazine, not the clip, and then it cuts to the soldier doing it with the candy bar. It's like, what is... Man, movies, man.
Yeah, don't we love them?
Yeah, it's creepy. They turn us into people. Okay. That's a good call. I appreciate it. Neat. Let's do a couple more here. We got best soundtrack. Here, Guns of Navarone was the outsider for me. Tears of the Sun was number 3. Star Wars was number 2. And number 1 for me is Jarhead. Tears of the Sun is Hans Zimmer sounding very much like the Thin Red Line, but doing work that isn't in the Thin Red Line, that is even, in my opinion, more desperate in a lot of ways. I really loved that soundtrack, and it was put to just complete terrible use, we saw. It's easy to overlook Star Wars in this category because of how important the soundtrack is. But if you go back and just listen to the very first one and try to pretend like you've never heard anything like it, it's so incredible. Jarhead wins for me, though, because of the winking. We had this conversation about how the music is winking at us throughout the whole movie. It sounds good, it sounds cool, but it's happening in times that aren't cool or that are not good. The song Raining Oil doesn't sound like raining oil. And the scene is as a cinematography moment, that scene is fucking intense, man. And the music's doing this the whole time, and I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know how to handle that. It's really good.
Also, it's like visually a fantastic sequence. So there's some great soundtracks in here, you know, as particularly scores. I'm surprised that Glory wasn't on your top there. I mean, because
it was close.
Okay,
it's in there. It's really in there. That one's I mean, I gave the Wagner Charge an award. So
yeah,
but the opening. And the ending. Both, like,
yeah, that's a soundtrack we've listened to a bunch. I definitely love that soundtrack. There's, you know, not really a bunch that stand out to me. Star Wars, legendary. Apocalypse Now, that's like legendary song, songs and stuff. It also has some weird music or sound design, like when they go to the weird bridge and stuff.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. The actual winner, I think, here for me is Beast of War for soundtracks. Because I've listened to that soundtrack a bunch since we've watched that movie.
Yeah.
And it is a freaking weird soundtrack, and I really like it.
It is weird, and I do remember liking it. Which ones in particular, do you know?
I don't. I just let it play through on the on the old YouTube playlist there.
Right. No, it was a good one. I remember thinking it was very weird, and we said that it made a monster out of the tank in a lot of interesting ways.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the people in the tank that were the actual monster. That's the takeaway. Best exit? Speaking of the Beast of War, this is it. He gets carried away on a helicopter. Behind Enemy Lines does the same thing, except with a big jump and a football soundtrack. In my mind, both of those things are so, like, extravagant that I actually awarded that number two, even though it is literally so derivative. And maybe this one is too, I don't know, but Beast of War is incredible, Behind Enemy Lines, and then the other best exit, I said I gave it to the 54th Massachusetts in Glory.
No.
Give him out, 54th! Give him out!
That's not nice, but there it is. They did their job and they didn't win, but we're proud of them anyway.
There's no question about it. Best exit's Beast of War.
It's so good.
Sorry, I can't stay here and then just get sucked up on the helicopter. It's freaking excellent.
He just goes and goes and goes.
You know, what do we mean by best exit? People kicking the bucket? We had some good exits at the end of Paths of Glory.
We have best death later.
Oh, okay.
This is best exit.
All right, yeah. So,
a little different.
Yeah, by all means, then, it's 100% going to be, best exit, the doctor from Star Trek IV.
Wait a minute, where are you going?
Yes.
You're going to your ship, I'm going to mine. Science vessel. I got 300 years of catch-up learning to do.
You mean this is goodbye?
Why does it have to be goodbye?
Well,
how will I get your number? She says, don't worry, I'll find you.
See you around the galaxy.
and then just walks. Nope, I think you're right. That's it. In fact, I may have had that in mind when I wrote the category and then forgot completely about it.
Yeah.
To give out the award. Oh my God, that's the winner. Yep. Okay, best shootout. I had a couple of different choices. Meituan, for me, the one at the ending we said was really good because it was very clumsy and very blunt.
Mm-hmm.
I also said the scene in Beasts of No Nation when they're hiding inside the can and the shootout is happening outside.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, was very, very intense. And as far as a shootout is concerned, obviously I'm trying to strip glory and extravagance from the shootout, and that did a pretty good job. And then I also put the scene at the end of Jarhead, where, there's the scene where they find everyone and they shoot their guns, but I was thinking in particular of the one where they bomb, where they're about to shoot the guy, and then they're told they don't get to shoot the guy, and instead the jets come in and do the thing, and it all happens at once. You could really do either of those scenes as far as I'm concerned, because they both work. But yeah, those are my choices. I also put Bloody Sunday in here, though, because I thought the scene where the guys are like, oh, how many did you get? And all that, I keep saying that scene. To me, that's like a good shootout moment in my mind. I don't know.
Yeah. Meituan is definitely way up there. Meituan's shootout at the end feels impactful in ways that the entirety of Tears of the Sun does not.
Correct. Good cross cut there.
Mm-hmm. And it's this, and it's the same feeling for the action in Bloody Sunday, you know, like it's sort of the same weight to it once the guns go off, like shit is too real.
Mm-hmm.
13 Hours has better action than other movies. You know, we said it, Michael Bay knows how to craft stuff. It has better action than Siege of Shadowville.
Mm-hmm. It'll be cartoonishly ridiculous and then brutally real all at once.
All at the same time.
Michael Bay.
Yeah. And isn't that real action sometimes, maybe? Who knows? Full Metal Jacket has pretty memorable shootout in there when the guys are getting like blasted, like sniped, and then they're just shooting back and it's not hitting anything of any use. You're just seeing like this grotesque waste of resources.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should probably be way up there.
The 5 days of Squibs shootout, that one?
Yeah,
famous.
No, totally. Exactly. Lone Survivor, when they first start getting under attack in Lone Survivor, that is pretty intense. Like, when they bring up the RPK or whatever and they start lighting up the forest around them.
Yeah.
That feels intense.
I wanted to include Lone Survivor, and I know that it's not just this moment, but the disqualifying part was the guy falling to his knees with, you said it's like this shot is just so unnecessary and it's so over the top, and it's, to me, that took it out. But otherwise, Lone Survivor was intense with the shooting.
Yeah, that was definitely incredibly.
Little muzzle flash is far away that.
Mm-hmm.
Do real damage. Yeah.
I mean, Koba on top of the tank and riding a horse with two guns. I mean, that's a crazy shootout. And we don't want that shootout to happen also, which I think is very good. Yeah. So it's hard for me to truly choose here, but I think that, is it Planet of the Apes with that frickin' whole sequence with the shooting at the end?
It's a pretty big epic outro, man.
It's a epic outro, and it's. And we don't want it to happen, you know?
Another weird moment from that movie that jumps out at me when I said, you couldn't see them. And then as soon as they came through the smoke, the shooting started. Everyone was like, oh, shit.
Well, yeah, or they're just seeing the muzzle flashes first. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not cool.
I think that's what I'm going to choose as the best shootout. Yeah. Yeah.
There it is. Most groan-worthy moment. The most groan-worthy moment. I think we're going to agree on number one. Number three to me is when Luke gets a blanket in the Millennium Falcon. I have not written about this in a book chapter. Princess Leia watched her planet blow up. Luke just met Ben Kenobi. I do not understand why he gets a blanket. The next one to me is the end of Behind Enemy Lines. the football music, the sliding across the ice. This is why they killed Stackhouse. Stackhouse doesn't exist. Everyone has footage already. The whole thing is so fucking stupid. But by far, the most groan-worthy moment from the entire season is the motherfucking dog from Dam Busters.
Yeah.
It is.
It ruined the movie. It ruined what would otherwise have been a better movie. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Otherwise, a really good movie.
Oh, my
and
shit.
And they just lean into it. Yeah. And they will not cut it out, they have said.
Yeah. My nominees for groan-worthy moments, definitely Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, Lady Trips when she goes to give him some water.
Oh. I brought you some candy bars and some drinks.
I'm such a stupid bitch. How can I help you, you strong man?
We could also say your country's got to figure this one out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. And that's what makes Secret Soldiers of Benghazi really fun, is that it is chock full of groan moments. I mean, I groaned when frickin' Krasinski, like, pulled the gun out at the beginning. And I was like, oh, come on, man.
The whole thing is...
It's good action, and it's dumb as fuck.
I'm proud to know Americans like you.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's definitely some groans there, but yeah, when the lady went up there, the what, and she tripped, that was groan worthy.
Watch your step.
By all means.
I brought you candy bars and some drinks.
Got fucking Slim and in Big Parade. I was
just any moment he's on screen.
So many moments when they're hitting on the lady, I'm like, I'm squirming and I'm groaning myself. Is that, does that count?
Hidden Fortress has one of these too that I didn't put on my list. That is the drawing of straws in the Hidden Fortress. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dam Busters, I would say, like, potentially totally clinches it, because when the moment popped up, I was like, oh, God damn. Yeah. Oh, fuck. I forgot about that card at the beginning of the movie.
I love the moment where we're like, we had a hard time finding this movie, and then we understood why.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, it's a classic. It's a classic. It informs Star Wars. Why can't we that's why.
Look, Ike looking creepy as shit in Longest Day, that's a groan-worthy moment, absolutely, for sure.
Yes, it was. We think it made a former president walk out of a movie theater, but we're speculating.
Yeah. He, behind enemy lines, that has some hilarious groan moments in it, but that kind of made it more fun. Like, Secret Soldiers of Benghazi is like... That one is of the movie of just chock full of groan moments. That is the groan moment. Mm-hmm. I think aside from obviously a dog named N-word in the Dam Busters, my winning groan moment is what's her name in Strategic Air Command? Forgiving her husband.
Saying she's sorry. Helen's apology.
Yeah, don't apologize. Or Sally, is it?
Sally. Yeah, you're right. It's Sally. I got it wrong. But it is Sally, and she does apologize when she's right the whole time.
Yeah, a frickin' Air Force doctor held her and, like, they lobotomized her and just sent her back as a Stepford wife.
They gave her some of that meth or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. She's replaced with a robot. Cherry 2000.
Well, she just gave her whatever. They gave her whatever they're giving her husband to keep him in the plane. And she's like,
she comes up. Oh, yeah. I drove the car so fast over here.
I haven't slept in 12 weeks. You're right. That's definitely on the list.
Yeah, that's okay. The one for me. You picked also. We covered, I think, between the two of us, two of the biggest groans. Yeah.
Yeah. The dog ruined
it. The movie.
The movie is otherwise, like, really good, but the dog is in it, like,
I will never ever say that probably ever again. The dog. Take the dog out of the movie and definitely don't say its name all the time.
You can keep the dog. We said it's a very good dog. It just needs a name.
Everybody needs to be like, oh, come here, you. And then they look at his name tag and you go, I'm not going to call you that.
I love your moment where you're like, at any point, just turn to like Champ or Fido or Guy or like anything. Nope, they don't do that. They have to remember the dog. Charles, who's the best bad guy? The best bad guy. I said General Ripper from Dr. Strangelove to me is the best bad guy. Number two was Hickey and Griggs from Matewan twirling each other's mustaches, we said. And then number three is Sergeant Hartman from Full Metal Jacket.
Mm-hmm. What's that, Dad?
Is iconic and legendary and informative. Those are my best bad guys.
I got some good bad guys here. Obviously, the Zulus.
On their own country. Yep.
We have, yeah, the people trying to destroy that poor tank in Beast of War, the Americans and the bridge, that one very young Vietnamese girl with the sniper rifle sniping guys.
Are you going to give it to the Confederates in glory and to the Nazis in the longest day, Charles? Are we just going to keep going here? What's the...
Wait, are they bad guys? I thought we were saying bad guys.
Oh, right. The 54th Massachusetts, you mean?
No, so we got a bunch of bad guys here. Death Skull from Beast of War. He's definitely got to be up there and one of the top ones. Mm-hmm. The generals from Strategic Air Command getting Jimmy Stewart strung out. I hate that dude. Yeah,
the cigar guy. Yeah.
How about everybody above Kirk Douglas's rank in Paths of Glory is a total psychopath.
Mm-hmm. What's the top tippy 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 top general? I can't remember.
Yeah, the guy who's played by Adolphe Monjou. Yeah, he's like friendly, but then it's like, oh no, you're like the most psychopathic of them all.
France cannot afford to have fools guiding her military destiny. I'm grateful to you, Dax, for having brought this matter to my attention. Colonel Dax, how would you like General Miro's job?
He's perfectly grandfatherly and encouraging and just totally neutral. And that's what's so fucking terrible about the whole thing is he knows that he's ignoring things. He continues to.
Look, racist supply sergeant in glory. Nobody likes him. Thankfully, he got beat up. Mm-hmm. What's his name? Just stabbed him, just shivved him like 40 times in the place. That little shepherd that they let go in Lone Survivor, obviously the bad guy.
I was just looking at Lone Survivor. Yeah, that 12-year-old kid that runs down the hill like a gazelle just makes it in no time. I was trying to remember the name of the guy that killed 20 Marines last week. He was just knocking Marines off and nobody could do anything about it.
You didn't put Darth Vader?
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
I mean, as a villain, as a bad guy, he should be in the mix. He's definitely iconic. General Ripper to me is such a perfect statement about what makes America so terrible and evil and shitty.
Yeah.
Hickey and Griggs are like,
they're just delightfully perfect. Evil. And I would like to say that they're like jokey evil, but it's like,
right.
But probably the people that would take up that job, be really good at it and go to a place like that would probably act like that.
Just be that ridiculous. And then Sergeant Hartman or the drill Sergeant Hartman for me, he's real.
Yeah. Commandant, he's a good bad guy. Red Dawn has a bad, the Russian one, but not the Cuban. Big bad guy in there.
Right. Yeah, the big bad.
Apocalypse right. Now.
Yeah.
Is the bad guy ourself?
Right.
Are the bad guys the dudes sending him up the river? That are they like more insane than the guy who has gone insane by the war?
Are you an assassin? I'm a soldier. You're neither. You're an errand boy. Sent by grocery clerks. To collect a bill.
Harrison Ford is the real bad guy in that movie.
Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. Jarhead, Koba. Koba's like one of my top bad guys, I would say.
Human. What? Human. What? Human. What?
Before the Rain is chock full of menacing bad guys in that.
I feel like you talked about Koba and Daskal in the episode on Dawn of Planet of the Apes, but they're very similar with their like tragic stories turning them into the villain.
Oh, and then the main bad guy from Overlord 2018.
Him turning into a monster at the end of that movie was iconic. That's a thing.
And he turns into a literal monster, yeah. So so he's gonna be up there. You know what? I'm going to keep the role going for Beast of War. Duskull, we should have learned our lessons from him. He's going to be my best bad guy. But you're right. Like, Hartman is a really good bad guy.
Yeah. He scares me. I hear him places.
He's scary and he's real and people want to imitate him.
It's not good.
Not good.
Yeah. I think people would, like, sympathize with Duskull, but people idolize Hartman. And that's not good. Best drama. We watched a couple of dramas. I feel like we had just enough to make a category here. And I don't know if these are all dramas necessarily, but I counted Meituan as a drama.
Yeah, it's not really an action movie.
Right. You know? to me, I think you could call The Big Parade an action movie, but it's also not. It's like got a very little bit of action in it. And so I included it in this. And then Before the Rain. To me, Before the Rain is a really good example of what a drama can accomplish in the war platform in terms of focusing on the people and the choices that they have to make, and also how we get wrapped up in prior versions of the truth that seem to be cyclical notions of history, but that don't have to be. They can go other ways if we want. I don't know. It was smart.
Yep. I think I'm gonna choose Before the Rain. Yeah, that's my winner on that one.
Yeah.
It's the least action of all of them, I think, but it's such a deep story. Y'all gotta watch it and then write into us if you want to talk more.
I feel like Failsafe is a drama. Like, I included it in this list, and I definitely thought about making it into the top three. And it really is the power of that scene of just the two of them on the phone.
Yeah.
I said that very well could be a stage play, and it would blow your mind as a stage play, I think.
That performance is incredible. Yeah, I would agree with you for that, too. Failsafe.
Yeah.
By all means, watch those two.
Okay. Well, then, Charles, in that case...
I'm going to spit out this candle, and I'm going to go get me some Jerry's.
Sounds delicious. In the meantime, I am going to straddle this 40-megaton nuclear bomb.
Hey, what about Major Kong?
And wave my hat as wildly as I can and see where it takes me.
All right. Woohoo!
Around the galaxy.
Check out all the podcasts brought to you by Redwood Sound Labs. Finally, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about your favorite sports movies. Whether you want to hear a breakdown of the plot, arguments about who's the MVP of the film, or crit and lit about it, you'll find it all on Fields of Glory. Listen to the show that will help you live a better life with your beloved pets. It handles topics like proper food, nutrition, positive reinforcement training, and more. Certified dog behavior consultant Charlotte Peltz welcomes your pet concerns and questions in the podcast Living with Your Dog. Zach and Matt are two horror movie enthusiasts of varying experience discussing horror movies through the scope of content, context, and comedy. They'll hit on the good ones and the classics, but they're really excited for the bad ones. Listen to Watch No Evil. Charles is a Purple Heart recipient and cinematographer. Aaron is a professor and critical cultural scholar. Together, they explore the narrative, effective, and production politics of war cinema on the Real War Project. That's REEL, War Project.